Hubbard puts up a 3-point shot and he nails it.
Super Wednesday is ours.
Fantastic!
All 33,000 students at the University of Nottingham, they know what this means.
This is URN Sport.
Good evening and welcome to the URN Sports Show. My name is Joe Tanner. I'm joined in the studio by Chris, Amar and Jack. And we're here to bring you your Tuesday dose of all the sporting action going on around the world from the week gone by. We'll be covering the F1 action where Nico Rosberg won the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. We'll also be taking a look at the rugby action from the Autumn Internationals.
Farrell fancies that.
We'll also be taking a look at England's cricket test in India, and we'll also be having a look at the nominations for this year's Sports Personality of the Year.
Yeah, it's very humbling to be up here in front of so many great athletes. I'm a huge sports fan, and I'm extremely nervous right now, so apologies about that, but congratulations to everyone who was involved tonight.
So on to our first story of the day, which is the nominations for this year's BBC Sports Personality of the Year. The nominations are as follows: Nicola Adams, Gareth Bale, Alistair Brownlee, Sophie Christensen, Kadena Cox, Mo Farah, Jason Kelly, Laura Trott, Andy Murray, Adam Peaty, Kate Richardson-Walsh, Nick Skelton, Dame Sarah Storey, Jamie Vardy, Max Whitlock and Danny Willett. The 16 for 2016 were named after a year of British sporting greatness, including at the Olympics and Paralympic Games in Rio. So how do people vote? Well, the public will vote for their favourite by phone and online during the live show. And this year's event will take place in front of 12,000 people at the Genting Arena in Birmingham. Now, last year's winner was, of course, Andy Murray. The previous year, it was Lewis Hamilton. Guys, can Andy Murray, do we think, do it again? Is it a foregone conclusion that he'll win it this year after the years that he's had?
We've been talking about it for the last few weeks now, haven't we, on the show? It's always been Andy Murray, Andy Murray, Andy Murray. And I think it basically is a foregone conclusion. Like, the betting odds have got Andy Murray as favourite as being 1-7 to win Sports Personality Year. I think what's interesting, though, is there are 16 names, which is a new thing for this year, because previously I believe it's been 12. But what staggers me, in an Olympic year as well, Andy Murray is by far the favourite to win, but it's incredible the competition he'll be beating in order to do it. Like, you look at the 16 names, Chris Froome, who won the Tour de France, isn't on there. Bradley Wiggins, who became the most decorated Olympian in British history, isn't on there. And that just goes to show, like, how strong the competition has been this year. You've got someone like Max Whitlock, who's not favoured to win at all, but yet he's won two gold medals for the gymnastics, something that a male British gymnast has never done before. Did it for the first time in this Olympic Games. You've also got people like Alistair Brownlee, who retained the Olympic gold. You've also got people like Mo Farah, who did the double again. And yet, Andy Murray's gone and done better than all of them. For me, it's just staggering, actually. I think Andy Murray will win it, but I think it's just so good to see how British sport have got so many great nominations out there. Like, even Jamie Vardy winning the league with Leicester, 5,000-1. Gareth Bale winning the Champions League with Real Madrid and going to the semi-finals with Wales and the Euros. It's just such a staggering list of sports people. Sorry, I went on there.
The calibre of competition in the list for this year's Sports Personality of the Year is pretty unrivaled, to be honest with you. And the fact that they've made it 16 this year to pay tribute to what a year it's been for British sport is surely testament of how brilliant these athletes have been. Amar, what's your predictions? Maybe not for Andy Murray, who we kind of, I think, all agree will finish at the top, but maybe for those who finish in second and third?
Well, I think if you look at the list, you can see that only Gareth Bale and Jamie Vardy are the non-Olympians who have been nominated. And I just think that shows how successful of an Olympics and Paralympics we had over in Rio. Mo Farah obviously deserves a nomination for his double-double that he got over the summer. And the Kennys, Jason and Laura, they both won 3 and 4 golds respectively, so I think that they'll be in the mix with the top three. And obviously Max Whitlock and Alex de Brownlee and Adam Peaty, they've all had excellent summers. And I haven't even mentioned Nicola Adams yet. She had a great summer winning gold for Team GB. And I just think it's so tough to call second and third place. While I do think Andy Murray might have top spot in the bag, I do think that someone like Mo Farah or Jason Kenny can draw him in close contest with that, especially considering Murray won recently last year, that some people might not want him to win 2 years on the bounce.
Hi, this is Jeff Selling from Sky Sports, and you're listening to URN Sport.
You are listening to URN Sport on this Tuesday evening. Now we're going to go over to Amar, who's got the story on the F1 action from the weekend.
As we saw over the weekend, Nico Rosberg came second in the Abu Dhabi race to win the championship. He won his first Formula One world title despite Lewis Hamilton disobeying Mercedes team orders not to back his teammate into rivals. Hamilton won the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, driving slowly in an attempt to bring other drivers into the battle, knowing he needed Rosberg to finish below third to win the championship. Hamilton was reportedly told to speed up, but told the team in the mics to let us race. Rosberg came under pressure from Vettel, but held off the Ferrari driver to come second. Rosberg said his drive to winning the first world championship in Abu Dhabi was the toughest race of his life. He had to contend with Mercedes teammate Hamilton driving deliberately slowly to try and ensure other drivers pass the German. Hamilton's tactics in backing up his teammate from the start of the race ensured an intense afternoon for Rosberg. He was under pressure throughout, and at one stage needed to find a way past Red Bull's Max Verstappen after being told it was critical to overtake. He admitted to doubting his ability to win the title from time to time during the season, for most of which he had led on points after a series of reliability and other problems for Hamilton. He said his oft-repeated mantra of taking it one race at a time had been a key aspect for him to win the title, especially after starting the season with four straight wins. Hamilton controlled the race from the front and was under instruction from Mercedes management not to try any strategic games to delay Rosberg. However, he disregarded message to speed up and prevent Vettel, and Red Bull's Max Verstappen was closing on Rosberg. The German in turn complained on radio to the team to consider doing something, and the tense title battle will do nothing to improve the already cool relationship between the drivers. So what did you guys make of the race? Was Hamilton right to use a slowing down tactics?
It's going to be a tough one. Obviously, if you're a Hamilton supporter, you'll say that, you know, he wasn't doing nothing wrong. And if you're a Rosberg supporter, you'll say, well, why didn't Hamilton speed up and, you know, stop Rosberg from making a gap on the chasing drivers? But
yeah, I mean, I think that the championship, I wouldn't say it was won, but it was decided before the final race. I think you look back at a couple of the races that have happened this year, and you look at the sort of mechanical failures that Hamilton had, especially the one in Malaysia when he was leading for the majority of the race. I think he was leading for something like 60 laps, and then he had an engine failure which caused him to not finish and gave Rosberg the upper hand. Hamilton, you know, at the start, Hamilton did come back after Rosberg managed to win the first couple of races. Hamilton managed to bounce back and win a couple of his own, and, you know, he did extend the lead. But I think that with the mechanical failures that he encountered throughout the entirety of the season is perhaps what, I wouldn't say gifted Rosberg the championship, but it's certainly what lost Hamilton the championship this year.
Yeah, no, I think that as well, to be honest. I think it was more of a season that Hamilton lost more than Rosberg won, to be honest, because I think a lot of people would agree that Hamilton is generally the better driver than Rosberg. But ultimately, there's no denying it, Rosberg does deserve the title. He has won it over, I think it was it 17 races over the season? And it's like you say in the football or any sport over a season, you know, you can't be lucky in winning it over that amount of time. But going back to the race, actually, I think when we talk about like the great racing drivers, like people like Schumacher, Senna, you know, they never used to listen to what people told them what to do. So I think that's just more Hamilton reacting to the situation. He thought generally he had a chance here to win it, or he had a chance to generally take advantage of something. And so I think he had every right to disobey orders, to be honest. Well, that's what Mercedes been saying for years. Like, you're in a competition with the other, race each other.
This is it. This is the thing. Hamilton went into this race knowing exactly what needed to be done. He could have chosen to just put his foot down and drive ahead, but then what is he going to gain? He's at that point, he's just praying and hoping that Rosberg maybe undergoes a collision himself. I'm not saying that Hamilton was trying to cause a collision in terms of slowing down and, you know, not letting Rosberg create a gap, but he had two choices. It was either go out in front and just leave it to fate, or try and perhaps slow the race down a bit and maybe make something happen.
Hi, I'm Paul Merson, Asbin footballer, and you are listening to URN Sport.
We've heard our story about the Sports Personality of the Year shortlist. We've also covered Nico Rosberg's Formula One victory at the weekend, and now we're going to move on to England's test with India, which Jack is covering for us today.
Yes, thank you very much, Joe. India completed an 8-wicket victory over England on the fourth day of the third test in Mohali to go 2-0 up with two matches of the series to play. The tourists were 78 for 4 overnight, but only managed to reach a second innings total of 236, leaving India a lowly target of 103 to win the third test. Joe Root and Haseeb Hameed hit 78 and 59 respectively, whilst the latter was batting with a broken hand and will now return home from the England squad. The number one test side in the world have now gone 17 matches without being beaten and will wrap up a series victory if they avoid defeat in the fourth test in Mumbai, which begins on the 8th of December. England, however, have lost four of their past six matches, with former England captain Michael Vaughan quoted as saying, "England need to look in the mirror and ask themselves why it keeps happening, and that there is something not right in the mentality in the dressing room." Now, guys, I just wanted to ask a quick question to you. There are two tests left. The best that England can get out of this tour is, of course, a draw. If they win again, if they win against India in the final two, do we think that's a possibility for this England squad?
No. I don't think it is. We talked about it before on the show, before the test series started and when England were playing in Bangladesh in their series, that there was a possibility of a whitewash. And while the first test was, we saw some positives with the draw, I think in the last two tests we've seen that India are on another level to England. And I hate to say it, but this England test team aren't good enough in the subcontinent, and we need to have a good look at our approach to games in the subcontinent. We've seen in Hameed, he's got potential to be a very good batsman, but then we look lower down that order and we've got guys who get starts but they can't seem to move on and get those big scores. And in comparison, you look at India, you've got the likes of Virat Kohli, who have kicked on from, I remember 5 or 6 years ago, Virat Kohli was sort of a in and out member of the Indian test team. He was sort of potentially could have been the next Tendulkar, but he wasn't making those big scores, and now he's kicked on, and we need someone like Joe Root or Johnny Bairstow in that upper mid order to kick on and make centuries, because it's not every time. We can't rely on Cook to make those big scores and be the steady ship every time, because he will make smaller scores, and we need that mid order to come in and make the scores. And we've seen in the last two tests and the last four innings, once the top two have gone out, once Hameed and Cook have gone out, it's been pretty much a collapse, and I think that's the main reason why England won't win any of the next two tests.
I remember being much more optimistic going into this, because I think because like it was quite easy to forget and dismiss the fact that England was actually on a quite good winning streak, but the subcontinent's always been, you know, our downfall. I think to be fair to England, it obviously is very hard to play India away from home. You know, had we played them in England, I think it'd be a completely different story, but India just played to their strengths at home, and that's something we just can't see to be able to combat. To be honest, you know, you just have to look at, you know, how was it Virat Kohli's done. Ashwin was again fantastic. You know, I think he's the number one bowler in the world at the moment, isn't he? And also you've got Jadeja, who also put in a high score, and then you just kind of look at how the English boys have done, and apart from really Johnny Bairstow had a wonderful 89, you know, Ben Stokes, you know, offering some form of resistance with Butler as well. You know, and also, you know, it just didn't really go our way. Well, Joe Root did also put a good 78 as well, but we just kind of got our class, and I don't really see how we'd be able to turn that into a win from this position, especially with two tests left to go.
Well, she can't take anything from away from India's bowling and fielding performance. The like of Ashwin and Jadeja have been pretty superb, I think, not just in this test but throughout the season. You look at the England batting and it was pretty atrocious, to be honest. Lots of players not going, getting off the mark. Moeen scored 5 runs in the second innings. Batty got out for a duck. as did Rashid. Anderson only made 5 runs. It's pretty appalling, to be honest. And when compared to the India total of 417 all out, it's really, England need to be looking at what India are doing to kind of get that success, because they need to be hitting 400, 500 run targets, basically, in comparison to the 283 and 236 all out, which we've been seeing far more too much of a familiar picture of in these tests, and that's why there's been such an element of inconsistency.
Hi, I'm Stuart Pearce, and you're listening to URN.
Now we're going to move on to some news from the Autumn Internationals Rugby Union, which Chris Young is covering for us this week.
Thank you very much, Joe. Actually, Jack was just saying in the break, it's been a really good week for the home nations. All 4 of them have won this weekend. So England beat Argentina despite being, for the most part, actually 14 men against 15 men. Elliot Daly rightly seeing red early on in the game, it has to be said. But wonderful game from England. You know, penalty try, Johnny May also scoring a try as well to ensure that we won 27-14. Scotland beat Georgia 43-16. Stuart Hogg again pushing his status as to why or to how he could be potentially the best fullback in the world, in my opinion, at 43-16 against Georgia. But then I have to admit, these two results were somewhat of a shock. Maybe not the first one. Ireland beat Australia 27-24, and you know, obviously a couple of months ago in August, I think it was, or was it September? I'm not actually sure, to be honest. Ireland did the unthinkable and beat New Zealand, and now they've hosted Australia and they've beaten them as well. So England play Australia next week, but this is obviously such a strong indication of how far Irish rugby have come over the last couple of years, beating Australia 27-24. And then this was a shocking one as well, actually. Wales beating South Africa by a really big margin of 27-13. So Wales had been expected, and people have been saying that they've been on the decline over the last year. You know, they didn't have a great Six Nations, they've not been very convincing in the Autumn Internationals, they got spanked by Australia, and now they've suddenly come around and beaten South Africa, who admittedly are not at their strongest, and I think that showed against England. But still, this is a remarkable result for Wales. It's been a really good weekend for the 4 home nations, definitely.
It's been a really good week for them. Arguably, it's retribution for when the Northern Hemisphere sides performed very poorly in the 2015 World Cup last year in England, and all the Southern Hemisphere sides finished in the semi-finals. Of course, New Zealand went on to win, but yeah, no, they've been performing very well. I think it's interesting to talk about England's success, because arguably the victory against Argentina was much down to the boot of Owen Farrell, who secured 5 penalties,
exactly,
which brought home most of the points. But nonetheless, to win the game 27-14, albeit against an Argentina side who are quite average, but with 14 men, that's some achievement on a rugby pitch for 18 minutes. And Michael Johnson's come out, former England Rugby World Cup winning captain, has come out and said they're starting to look like the beginnings, laying the foundations for a side that could go on and win the World Cup.
This is URN Sport.